Welcome to Medically Speaking, Auburn's own medical radio show with host Dr. Mark Vaughn of the Auburn Medical Group and Larry Finney.
Good Saturday morning to you. This is Dr. Mark Vaughn of Medically Speaking Radio with
Larry Finney.
We are glad to have you with us. This week, we will be talking about pre-hospital medical care, things like CPR out of the hospital, things that happen before paramedics or first responders arrive, and everything having to do with paramedics and first responders with our special guests, Krista Duvall and Eric. I don't know Eric's last name.
Wins. Yeah. So for those of you who like to play doctor, this will be your chance.
Yes, and we will have some prizes. We'll let Krista talk a little bit more in detail about what the prizes include. You need to have the phone numbers, though, so you can call in for those. The phone number is 885-3565, or if you're outside of the area, 1-800-950-KHI. And we'll give that to you a little bit later.
Trust me, you're going to want to call.
Yeah, they actually brought some good stuff. Okay, so what happened this week? Let's see. We had the shooter at Fort Hood survive. I think last week when we were talking, we assumed he was killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's paralyzed from the waist down.
We have the whole health care debate because it was...
I say we still waterboard the upper half, though.
The health care debate, they passed a resolution in Congress since our last show. It wasn't too long after that last show. And we may talk about that a little bit later. Also, actually, that was the subject on News and Views this week. Did anybody catch that?
Nobody. Isn't that the show that you are on?
That's right. They had a special guest.
So I'm supposed to help you shamelessly plug.
Yeah, that's what the Jerry Lyons show on the local cable network, Wave Broadband. They're on Channel 4. They have a show on every Wednesday at 6:30. And he actually has very positive news and very local news. And then he interviews someone in the last hour of it. And so we spoke about the healthcare debate, had a few calls come in. And we can continue that discussion during the first part of the show if anybody wants to out there. I do want to get some things across here, though. I do want to, as always, encourage people to support our advertisers, Sutter Auburn Faith Hospital, Sutter Auburn Hospice, the Auburn Medical Group, and our advertisers, Auburn Drug and Dr. Kihara, the dentist. Flu shots. We need to get you up to date on flu shots. The regular seasonal flu shot for regular seasonal flu that really hasn't hit yet, they have been going very fast, even though they manufactured 1 million more shots this year at least. Supposedly, than last year. Ours are gone at our office. The county is having, I think, one last or two last flu shot clinics, and so we have the phone number for Placer County Health Department. It's 889-7141. That's also on our website at medicallyspeakingradio.com on the notes page, show notes, and you can find out where and when they will still have seasonal flu vaccine. There are two
events happening today.
Today. It may be too late to get tickets for either of them. The one is called Neptune's Garden and Underwater Fantasy. That's associated with the hospital, and that phone number is 888-4557. And then there's the Power Club Benefit for the Blind also today, and the number for that is 888-1888. Again, both of those numbers are on our website, medicallyspeakingradio.com. You just look at the notes. There's also the Celebration Cares All-Star Concert coming up December 14th. That's in a month from today. The number for that is 878. Oh, wait. I don't have the last digit there. You will have to go to the website to find the phone number.
Oh, you can guess. It we'll give you the digits that we have. It's 530-878-136. And then, you know, the typewriter fell asleep.
Yeah, there's only 10 possibilities. But that last digit is available on the website. A little update on H1N1 or the swine flu. CDC kind of changed some numbers here just lately. They had been only giving numbers for actual confirmed cases where they ran the lab and it came back showing that, yes, indeed, this infection was the H1N1 influenza virus. Now they've expanded it a little bit. Anything that is a suspected death from influenza, since the H1N1 virus is responsible for 93% of influenza infections right now, when they test for it, they did some recalculations, and they've come up with the estimate there's been just near 3,900 deaths. I'll say that again because my lips tripped over each other. 3,900 deaths in the United States in the last 6 months, 22 million infections, and of those deaths, 540 were pediatric children.
So we may be unfairly blaming H1N1 for some of these based on testing
the fact
only?
That, yeah, on the fact that these weren't actual confirmed tests in a lab that said this was the H1N1 virus that was involved. But if it's an influenza-like illness, and we know that 93% of influenza, when we test, is the H1N1, they came up with those numbers. And then we can speak about healthcare reform. I just want to get out one little thing on that, if I can. I've been looking at the situation here and seeing it a little bit differently just in the last week or so. And we'll be having a guest on in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, December 12th. We'll be having Dr. Josh Hampman, actually for his second show on December 12th, where he's going to be speaking about healthcare reform. And he's in favor of the proposal that's has passed Congress and is going to the Senate right now. I have to let people know about something that I discovered on that I really don't like. We know that Medicare is scheduled for a 21.2% cut starting January 1st. That's already in place. That's going to happen. Your doctor gets paid one-fifth less for everything he's doing. In addition to that, this bill that was passed by Congress cuts an additional $500 billion from Medicare over the next 10 years.
Now, wait, is this the bill passed? You said passed Congress. Just passed the House.
I'm sorry.
it hasn't gone through the Senate yet.
I was thinking Congressman. Yes. The House of Representatives passed it.
Barely.
Barely. It was 220 to 215.
Yeah.
$500 billion of this was at $1.3 trillion now. $500 billion, so a little bit less than half, is coming from cuts to payments for Medicare. That's absolutely gutting Medicare. So if this thing goes through, I don't know what's going to be left for the Medicare patients to receive.
Yeah, well,
so people want to call about that, you're welcome to at 885-3565.
And it's on rocky ground anyway, even before it passes the Senate, because they're still waiting on the Congressional Budget Office's final numbers.
Yes. So we also will be having our guest, Krista Duvall, later in the show, speaking about CPR, pre-hospital care, and Eric Wentz also.
That's right.
Both of them. They are partners in a business called, can I say it right, Smart Heart CPR.
Not to be confused with Heart Smart, which is like a cereal, right?
Which I actually wrote it wrong on my website. But the link is correct. We checked the link, and it does go to their website.
Yeah. And one thing we might also want to remind our listeners today, Dr. Vaughn, is that we're going for 90 minutes today. We're doing our very best to save you from an infomercial at the end of our normal time.
That's what it's all about.
If you want to hang in with us for the long haul, you might want to pack a lunch and stick with us. We'll be here till 11:30.
Okay. There is one news item that I found rather interesting here, and that was that the FDA found bits of steel and rubber in these drugs from a company called Genzyme. Genzyme makes drugs that replace enzymes that people don't have. They're born without them. So these are rather rare genetic problems like Fabry disease or Gaucher disease. Supposedly, you can actually see particulate matter inside of the vial before you inject the drug in the patient. So if you see that, you're supposed to send it back to the company and let the FDA know. They did not take it off the market, though, and the reason they didn't was because nobody's been hurt by it yet, and there's nothing else available for these patients. They're in big trouble without it. So even though there's a potential danger there,
someone is stepping on the Genzyme stash, huh?
I guess so.
There. Well, what's that disease that people get where they eat odd things like clay, or it's a nutritional issue?
Are you talking about pica?
Yeah.
Now, there's also an odd...
Maybe this is for those folks. They could just put that kind of stuff in pill form, and you could eat, you know, swallow dirt pills or
I thought you were going to talk about Ehlers-Danlos, where they actually self-cannibalize.
Oh, no.
That's a whole show in itself.
Oh, boy. I'll tell you what.
All right, we're going to play our disclaimer, then play a commercial break, and we'll be back with Krista Duvall and Eric Wentz.
We desperately need a disclaimer.
The content of this website and the Medically Speaking radio show are meant for entertainment and for general information purposes.
No doctor-patient relationship is attempted or implied through the show or the website.
Any medical advice, home remedies, and all other medical information on this website or radio show should not be treated as a substitute for the medical advice of your own doctor.
Do not attempt any treatment mentioned on the website or the show without consulting your doctor.
Always consult your own doctor if you are in any way concerned about your health.
If you need a doctor and live near Placer County, call Jen at 530-886-8630.
If you have a medical emergency, call 911.
Medically Speaking Radio, Dr. Mark Vaughn, Auburn Medical Group, K-High Radio, and or our sponsors are not responsible for any diagnosis or treatment made by anyone based on any of the content of this website or the Medically Speaking Radio show.
In addition, the views and opinions expressed on the show or on linked websites are not necessarily those of Dr. Mark Vaughn,
K-High Radio, the Auburn Medical Group Incorporated, or any of the show sponsors.
This is Dr. Mark Vaughn. I wanted to let you know a little bit about our practice at the Auburn Medical Group. The physician, nurses, and front desk personnel all approach the patient, asking themselves the question, how would I want to be treated if I was in the patient's shoes? Listen to what one of our patients has to say about her experience at the Auburn Medical Group.
My name is Susie Brown. I just want to sincerely thank that group of people for being there for me in some emergency situations. They are very efficient. Their staff, including their receptionist, even when you call her, she's got sympathy and compassion for you. And when you're ill, that's what you need. The nurses, the nurse staff is wonderful, and Dr. Vaughn listens to everything you say, and they just get on things. They do not let anything lag.
If you need a doctor, call us at 886-8630 or look at our website at auburnmedicalgroup.com.
Do you find yourself overspending, overeating, or in unhealthy relationships? Is your anger out of control, or do you struggle with drugs and alcohol? Are you tired of just trying harder to deal with your struggles? If you answered yes to any of these questions, there's help available. Celebrate Recovery is an international ministry that meets locally at Parkside Church, 3885 Richardson Drive, Auburn. Meetings are held every Friday night from 6 to 9:15 p.m. All areas of recovery are welcome. Celebrate Recovery is a Christ-centered, 12-step recovery program that offers real and lasting change. Contact Sheila Dobbin at 823-9911. That's 823-9911. For a listing of Celebrate Recovery locations, go to celebraterecovery.com. We invite you to join us at Parkside as we celebrate recovery.
Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
Okay, welcome back to Medically Speaking. And hello to our viewers out there on our website. We see that you're there on the video feed. Anybody who wants to see us, except for Eric, who's off on the other side of the studio. Eric, say hi. Oh, okay, say it again.
Good morning.
But you can, maybe we'll turn the computer around so people can see Eric. But we are there at medicallyspeakingradio.com. Click video and you can see us waving at you. We have here our guests. We have Krista Duvall, and I'll turn the computer to see you now.
I'm hiding behind the monitor there.
There's Eric Wentz.
See my hand at least.
That's right.
Good save.
Oh, our viewers were just treated to an almost crash of the laptop there.
Okay, don't tell my wife it's actually her laptop. Okay, you guys have a business, and it is called
Smart Heart CPR.
SmartHeartCPR.com. And the link, of course, is on medicallyspeakingradio.com. I probably shouldn't say that this many times. I probably said it enough for this 90-minute show already.
Sure.
Yeah.
You have much more time to do.
I'll mention it again.
Pace yourself.
Tell us, Eric and Krista, what is... Oh, man, I can't... I keep wanting to say the name of a breakfast cereal. That's why... and I got it wrong on the website.
It's okay. Everybody does it.
It is Heart Smart CPR.
No, Smart Heart.
You guys are going to leave us going on another radio show. Okay, I'll let you say it from now on. Tell us about it.
Well, I guess I'll start. Krista and I have been paramedics for quite a few years, and being in the predominantly in the fire service, you know, there's CPR, it changes all the time, and based on American Heart guidelines, and we wanted to do something that we'd be able to use what we felt was our expertise and kind of try to communicate that to the people that we taught. And so a little over a year ago, we decided to put our brains together and started teaching CPR. And as we started doing that, we started realizing that the automatic external defibrillators are really so important that we started training people how to use those, and we actually started marketing those ourselves.
Automated external defibrillators, sometimes called AEDs. These are the little colorful boxes we see in public places like malls and airports. And
yeah, basically the science is, you know, if you'd watch, you watch TV and they pull out the old paddles and they, you know, they put them on your chest and they shock. That's basically what these are. You know, over years, they've been perfected so that there's not really too much thinking into it. It's the machine pretty much does it for you.
And now you do this training for Joe Citizen and for, as well as for professional first responders?
Yeah, first responders and people that work in the healthcare field have a little bit different requirements. The training is a little bit more to recertify every 2 years, but we do both what we call lay CPR, layperson CPR, and then the first responder CPR.
Okay, we probably ought to get into what these defibrillators are used for. So, who wants to address that? These colorful little boxes we find at airports and various other places.
Well, basically, when somebody suffers sudden cardiac arrest, predominantly what happens is the bottom portion of the heart goes into fibrillation, so it'd be ventricular fibrillation. And there is no way of coming out of ventricular fibrillation without electricity.
And when this is happening, instead of the muscle making a nice little pumping action,
exactly,
where it pushes blood out, it's just wiggling instead, not moving blood anywhere.
Yeah, the whole heart quivers. And basically, at the bottom of the heart is where the real powerhouses are as far as pumping blood through your system. And what happens is the heart, it gets irritated, whether it's because of infarction or you know, disease, it starts to quiver, and so there's no blood pumping. And all those little cardiac cells, they're firing off, and the heart just doesn't know what to do. It's being stimulated by this, by these electrical chaos, basically. And so nothing of efficiency is happening, and that's pretty much why people end up dying, is because the blood's not flowing.
So the heart's basically out of sync. And so to kind of give a visual to our listeners, because it is radio, this is like the scenes that you see on TV and movies where the doctors slap the paddles on people and yell clear and then jump back and shock them. This is, these little boxes basically perform that function, right?
Exactly. And that's the thing, you know, on TV, that everything's so spectacular, and you see that flat line and everything, and that's so ludicrous, because that's just showing that the heart has no electrical activity. What these defibrillators do is they depolarize the whole heart at one time, and then it allows the heart to restart in that normal rhythm that it's used to.
Now, can anybody use one of these, someone who's maybe never even seen one?
You know, that's the interesting thing about it, is it's such a regulated technology, and the training, you know, that goes into it. But now they've got these things down to where they're required in healthcare facilities, in gyms. They're putting them in airports and in grocery stores. And the technology is refined down to the point where these things will not shock unless it senses the rhythm, a shockable rhythm. And so they're so user-friendly now, they talk to you, they tell you exactly what to do, they tell you to remove the person's clothing, you know, to expose their chest, shows you how to put the patches on. It goes into a diagnostic, it tells you if it's going to shock, it tells you to clear the patient.
It tells you on a display that you're reading, or it actually talks?
It's a voice command.
A voice is telling you, walking you through as you're looking at the stuff, it tells you where to put it?
Yeah. So basically, you know, you're not going to put yourself in harm's way, and you're not going to put your patient in harm's way. It basically walks you through everything, and now they have ones. The one that we use as it's cardiac science AED, and it has a metronome, and it actually explains how to do CPR. So if you have never taken a CPR class, it'll explain where to place the hands. It'll actually time your compressions and your ventilations.
Does it play Stayin' Alive?
we do that.
Well, the pace for the compressions is actually here it is. Believe it or not, the pace for chest compressions, I understand, is actually this beat right here.
Exactly.
And we actually play this song in our CPR classes to give it a little bit more fun, and everybody can see.
So everyone has the song stuck in their head. They could do the CPR rhythm. But don't point at the ceiling and then at the floor alternatively between, you don't have to wear a white leisure suit or anything to do this. Anyone not wearing a white leisure suit could theoretically do this.
Yeah, those are the bystanders. It's always good to have cheerleaders when you're doing CPR.
Okay, so it has the metronome that's clicking. It tells you when to put the pads and where to put them, mm-hmm. and then what does it do?
Well, basically, it'll analyze the rhythm. So it'll ask the person that's performing all these procedures to step away, and it allows the computer to analyze the heart rhythm. And then if it senses that person is in ventricular fibrillation, and sometimes it'll even sense on certain defibrillators will even sense on a shockable ventricular tachycardia. So that would be the ventricles traveling so fast that it's not pumping blood, so there's no pulse. It'll actually sense that and allow the machine to shock and try to correct that fibrillation.
If I could throw something in too, what's really great about this machine is if somebody's hearing impaired, it does have the visual on the screen to tell you what to do. So it has both.
Do the machines speak only English, though, right? Even if they talk right now?
Actually.
Have they made other language, one for Spanish kind of thing?
I'm sure that they have that technology, and it may be something that can be, when you order a certain, certain AED that speaks to you, they may be able to program it to that. As of yet, I haven't seen anything where you can press different languages to adjust to your rescuer.
I'm sure that's coming, because I'm thinking airports, right?
Oh, yeah.
Especially international airports.
Yeah.
If this thing doesn't speak Russian, I'm hoping that the person rescuing me knows what's going on.
Yeah.
You mentioned how easy it makes it, and it's reading the rhythm, so you don't even have to have a display there showing you the heart rhythm. Have these made their way into the professional setting yet, as far as actual paramedics or hospital settings?
Well, it's come full circle, and where in the larger departments, I kind of have to explain how, say, the fire department or an ambulance service works is. You usually typically have an EMT, EMT-1, that does basic life support. And then you have ALS, which is advanced life support, which would be a paramedic. In the field, paramedics have used their ECGs. So we would look at, just like in the hospital, they're the same monitors where you can see the heart rate or the heartbeat. And they have the ability to shock with the traditional paddles that you'd always see. And those have been out in the field for a long time. And then they started really realizing that the electrical therapy was so important that they started making these semi-automatic defibrillators where they could train EMT-1s to apply these things and use them. And there was some discretion and some protocol that they have to go through. And then they would actually have to press the button to shock. Now, with the way technology is and computers, they've been able to get this thing to the point where they can actually put these things in shopping centers and airports, to where it does all the work for you. If you just follow the simple procedures that the machine will actually perform the procedure for you.
Now, most folks don't have these things at home, so. What does that tell us about the importance of CPR? If I don't happen to have an AED in my home, and by the way, if I wanted to, how much would one of those cost before we move on to CPR?
Well, there's kind of different levels of AEDs. You can get even Costco is selling AEDs. There's some that are really generic and they have no bells or whistles, and they'd be somewhere around $1,200. And then they go up into the $3,000 range.
We need to take a break right now. We'll get back into our discussion. Callers who want to call in should give us a call at 885-3565 or 1-800-950.
What is it that we're giving away to callers?
Oh, we have a class, a CPR class tomorrow. We'll give or we can do one next year, but we're giving away a free CPR, first aid, and AED class.
Yes.
We're 2-year certification.
And that's a $3,000 value? No, what?
$4,000.
About $4,000? Okay.
Priceless.
Well, not that much, but it's a good thing to have. Give us a call, 885-3565.
Gridstone Rock Club is Auburn's premier climbing and fitness facility. They offer rock climbing instruction for climbers of all ages and ability levels. In addition to classes, Gridstone Rock Club hosts birthday parties, has a team-building ropes course, and provides professional outdoor instruction. If you want to climb with Gridstone Rock Club, contact them at 530-885-ROCK or online at gridstonerockclub.com.
Larry, have you ever been to Auburn Drug Company?
Yeah, that's the one with the marble soda fountain at 815 Lincoln Way.
Yeah, right there in front they have the marble fountain, and in back is an independently owned pharmacy right here in Auburn.
And that thing has been around for a long time.
Since the 1800s. They are so great because they actually fill your prescriptions when you ask them to, unlike the chain drug stores that make you wait.
You know, and waiting there wouldn't be a big crime because, heck, you could always go to the soda fountain. That's Auburn Drug Company at 815 Lincoln Way in downtown Auburn. Give them a call at 885-6524.
Few things in life are harder than thinking about serious illness or the death of someone you love. Research confirms that Americans want the basic services that hospice provides. Care at home or in a home-like setting. Treatment that preserves a sense of dignity and respect. Emotional and spiritual support for patients and for their families, and effective pain management. Hospice helps patients and their families deal with end-of-life challenges in a life-affirming, compassionate way that brings dignity, hope, and love to every day of life. This message of love and caring is the focus of hospice care. This message is brought to you by Sutter Auburn Faith Hospice. We can be reached at 886-6650 or click on the link for Sutter Auburn Faith Hospice on the Medically Speaking Radio website.
Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
Welcome back to Medically Speaking Radio. This is, as usual, Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney, and our special guest from, can I say it right?
Smart
Heart CPR. Eric Wentz and Krista Duvall. We do have a caller on the line, and this is Betty. There was also another caller, too, and we do have a prize package for both of them. I'll let you guys know that right up front. So, Betty, what was your question?
I wanted to know when they would have classes, because my husband and I are due for the CPR, but we do need to get to a CPR class.
Before we answer that, Betty, we need to find out where you're calling from. But whatever.
Oh, I'm in Auburn.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, I didn't get you in time. I wanted you to say Chicago.
Oh.
Because, yeah, I want people to think we're really big. And we're so, Betty, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from near Bell and 49.
No, let's try it again. You're supposed to say Chicago, okay?
Oh.
Betty, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Chicago.
Excellent.
Maybe she's near Chicago Park or something.
Okay, well, our next class in Chicago, Betty, is
Chicago Betty.
Chicago Betty. We have a class in Penryn, at the Penryn Fire Department tomorrow morning from 9 to noon.
Okay, I can't make that one.
I know, it's kind of short notice.
Yeah.
But then our next one will be in January, and that'll be posted on our website,
okay,
which is smartheartcpr.com.
Smartheartcpr.com. Okay.
We usually have classes once a month at the fire department there for the general public.
In Penryn.
Michelle. Yes. We're just taking December off because of the holidays.
Okay. All right. That sounds very good, because we do need it.
Perfect. Everybody needs it.
Yes. I wish everybody would get it.
And Betty, Trevor's going to get your information.
Okay.
And then, Trevor, do we have Michelle on the phone also? Michelle from Kansas City, or Michelle, where are you from? Michelle?
North Auburn, Kansas.
Okay. Another caller from Auburn. What was your question?
No question. It was for the CPR class. I'm a CMT, and I need my CPR updated.
Perfect. So you're an EMT, you said?
Pardon me?
You said you're an EMT?
CMT.
Oh, CMT.
Certified massage therapist.
Perfect. Close to an EMT. we have a class tomorrow. Are you able to make that class?
Yes.
All right, you're in.
And where is it?
It's at the Penryn Fire Department, which is at 7206 Church Street.
Okay.
And you, if you Google it, it'll give you a map. And
so, Michelle, we're going to have Trevor get your information also so that we can have contact with you and make all the arrangements for that.
Great.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Two prizes already given away. We have half of the show to go here. Okay, now, during the break, Krista, you had you were going to say something about the chances of survival of CPR alone compared to with AED. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, if you do perfect CPR, which, you know, in the heat of the moment, not everybody might do perfect CPR, but if you do perfect CPR, perfect compressions to ventilation ratio, the chance of survival in that person is 3%. Which is a low number, but it's better than 0%. So it's very important. But when you apply that AED, the automated external defibrillator, it increases their chance of survival up to 75%.
Wow.
That's how important the defibrillators are.
And that's, you know, if I can point out, too, that we really try to stress early on everything, because that, you know, when the heart stops pumping, the blood's doesn't have oxygen going to it, and so, you know, brain death is within about four, could be anywhere from 4 to 6 minutes.
And how long does it take the average responder from the 911 call to get there? If you've got 4 to 6 minutes of time, no oxygen on the old brain.
Exactly, and that's really one of the points that we try to stress in our classes, is that I'll kind of march everybody to how a dispatch works. And you would think just even simple little things like how you call 911 does make a difference, whether you use a landline or you use a cell phone. You know, if you use a landline, you're going to go directly to the dispatching agency that's going to dispatch the fire department and the ambulance. So let's say it's here in Auburn. You call 911. You're going to get routed right to Placer County Dispatch through the Sheriff's Department. Those dispatchers will take all the information, and they're also trained, and they have all kinds of computer-aided dispatching programs and everything to find. They have that enhanced dispatch where they can actually pull up your address when you call, and they can also assist somebody through CPR procedures if they've never done CPR, don't know how to do CPR themselves. So if you figure, you know, from the time you call to the time that they're actually dispatching can take up to 2 minutes by the time all that call gets moved over and the fire department and the ambulance service receive that call. Then you have that little bit of lag time where the fire department and the ambulance is going to have to figure out where you are. They're going to have to look it up in the map books. They have to get their gear on and everything. And then you're looking at what we... In the fire service, we shoot for a 3 to 4 minute response time. And being in a rural community, you're not guaranteed anything as far as response times. So they're going to do their best to get there as quick as they can. But if you're pretty far out, you know, that response time could be pretty lengthy. So if you start adding up all those minutes, you know, 2 minutes to get the dispatch and then say 4 minutes for a response time, and nobody's doing CPR on this person, then they've sat there effectively 6 to 8 minutes without any blood flowing to the brain.
And so you're looking, at some form of brain damage or even brain death.
Exactly.
Yeah. So underscoring the importance of knowing CPR in order for the first responders to get there and deal with it. So in the meanwhile, what should the typical person at home have information-wise for the first responders when they get there?
If you're looking for just your garden variety medical call, you know, if anybody that has significant medical issues where they're, you know, they're being seen at the hospital any amount of time, definitely you want to have any prescription drugs that person is taking, you know, a list of them. You want to know what their medical allergies are and all of their medical problems, all of the any issues that may be significant, you know, when they go to the hospital.
What I wanted to talk about kind of before we even get to that point is both of you have experience in this, and our listeners don't know where you're coming from as far as your knowledge on this. So we should have done this with proper introductions. Krista?
Well, I've been a paramedic for 23 years, and I worked on an ambulance for 13 of those years, and then a paramedic firefighter for 10.
And Eric?
And I've been a paramedic firefighter for 17 years. And I currently, I work in a metropolitan fire department, very busy metropolitan fire department. And I'm also a deputy chief for Penrhyn Fire Department.
So, Krista, how did you get into this EMT game?
Well, actually, I was kind of unexpectedly put in the position. I had always wanted to be a pediatrician, I thought. And when I was about 17 years old, I still had kind of focused on law school, medical school, and becoming a pediatrician. And when I was 17 years old, I was put in a position where there was an accident in front of my house. I was living in Santa Barbara, and it was a motorcycle accident. It was a very severe accident with a lot of major injuries, and I was the first responder on that. And even though it was very upsetting, being 17 years old, it still was, I was amazed how I reacted under that, and I decided that I wanted to do something with emergency medicine.
How about Eric?
You know, I really haven't thought about that. You know, I really always kind of leaned towards the fire service when I was younger, and I got into the fire service as a volunteer, and then, you know, you start going on these calls and realize, oh, you got to be medically trained for this stuff, and then became an EMT. And then it's kind of like you're kind of stuck there. It's like you see all this other stuff going on, things that you want to do and things that you're picking up on. And so I decided to go to paramedic school. And a couple of years after that, I finally got my license.
You know, Krista mentioned the idea of an accident happening out in front of the house. And I think, you know, I've experienced that, a car wreck or whatever. Or maybe we're driving down the road and see that. So I notice your website mentions that 80% of cardiac arrests occur in the home, which probably means we should all be out driving around more. But but then again, we're subject to accident. But my point is, whether you're at home or whether you're out just doing your daily thing, you might be thrust into a situation where you're it. You are the first person there, and you need to know what to do. So that's underscoring the importance of your classes. Now, you teach, besides CPR, you also teach basic first aid as well. Could you kind of get into that a little?
Sure. Usually we teach with the CPR. We teach the CPR first because there's some people just need the CPR recertification. And with the first aid, it's about an hour-long course. Sometimes it'll take longer depending on questions, you know, and how we'll get more in-depth. But we cover the things that most people would encounter on a daily basis with their friends or family. There's poisonings, splintings, sprains and strains, snake bites, spider bites, the tip of chest pain, you know, heart attacks, strokes, things like that that we might encounter. And we just try to train people to be more aware of the signs and symptoms, not necessarily that we're trying to train them to be paramedics or doctors, but just what to do. They're the first link until an ambulance can get there. And if they can do something to increase, you know, decrease the risk of pain and increase the risk of them recovering better, then, you know, we like to make sure that they feel comfortable.
Now, some of the things that we tend to worry about are like the Good Samaritan laws. Mm-hmm. You know, if you do roll up on a scene and you're it, what are the laws that cover the first, and I'm not talking about the professional first responder, but Joe Citizen.
And something that would kind of bring this home would be that case where, was it local, where somebody removed a lady from a car, didn't have proper spinal alignment, did not keep her in a neutral position. She suffered a spinal cord injury and now is paralyzed because of it, and then suing this person who was trying to help.
Mm-hmm.
So pulling her from a burning car, I think.
Was it burning?
Yeah, I think it was some...
Yeah, so yeah. That's kind of the setting I want us to think about this in.
You hear about those horror stories all the time, you know, when... things like that have happened where people are being sued. They're trying to do the best thing that they can. And the Good Samaritan law, I'm not sure exactly when it came into effect, but it was in response to really kind of some frivolous lawsuits that were going on. Well,
that it really prevented people from doing anything. You know, they're more worried about their liability than they were helping anybody anymore. So basically, the Good Samaritan law is that you're not going to be held liable if you're attempting to assist somebody and something bad happens to them, or some, just like that example of pulling somebody out of the burning car and then they have spinal issues after. Well, you have to look at reality. It's like, okay, well, you would have probably been dead and probably would have died a horrible death burning in a car. So you know, the layperson CPR is really nice because it really removes that person from that liability. And really the only hitch is that they don't do something that's out of their scope of practice. You know, so they've been trained to do CPR. They don't want to, you know, do an arterial cut down or, you know, do something on that person that's just because they saw it on TV or they stayed at the Holiday Inn Express the night before. So, so really... when we get into the first responder aspect, though, then those people have a duty to act. So if they're on the job, whether they're volunteer or being compensated, they have a duty to act. So they have kind of a different standard that they have to go by, where the Good Samaritan laws don't really protect them.
We have to go into a break right now. We'll be back with our guests, Krista Duvall and Eric Wentz from Smart Heart, right after these messages.
Since 1966, Sutter Auburn Faith Hospital has been providing award-winning care to members of the community, to people just like you. The tradition of excellence continues today with our comprehensive family birth center, cancer services, 24-hour emergency care, and a whole range of outpatient services with convenient hours and locations to serve you.
In addition, we've been recognized for excellence in managing heart attacks, heart failure, pneumonia, and surgical care. We are one of a select few hospitals in the state to earn recognition from VHA's West Coast region for sustained outstanding clinical performance.
To learn more about Sutter Auburn Faith Hospital, visit us on the web at sutterauburnfaith.org/medicallyspeakingradio. That's sutterauburnfaith.org/medicallyspeakingradio.
Sutter Health, with you for life.
This is Dr. Mark Vaughn. I want to tell you about my dentist, Rodney Kihara. His office is located right in town at High Street and Auburn Folsom Road. His staff is pleasant. They smile when you walk in, and you know who they are because they're there every time. We're talking about Flo, Cheryl, and Judy. Their pleasant faces welcome you into the office and let you know that you're in the right spot, a comfortable place to go to the dentist. Call Dr. Kihara's office at 888-1966. That's 888-1966.
The doctor would say, don't stick anything in your ear. Unless, of course, it's medically speaking. On K-High, the voice of the foothills. Now, back to Medically Speaking with Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney.
Welcome back to Medically Speaking Radio with our guests, Krista Duvall and Eric Wentz of Smart Heart CPR. I got it right.
Got it right.
Okay, I'll just remember it starts with an S. As far as CPR goes, there have been some changes. I noticed when I last did my recertification in simple CPR that they were decreasing the emphasis on rescue breathing. Usually we think of CPR being the chest compressions and the breathing. And I guess more and more, as studies are coming around and the American Heart Association reviews them, they're seeing that, you know what? Those chest compressions in a heart that's not pumping blood are more important than the breathing side. Because if you do have oxygenated blood, it doesn't do any good if it's not going to the organs that need it. So that's one recent change. I think that went into effect, what, around 2005 or so?
I think it was 2005.
Okay. Other changes that have occurred?
The other changes are for lay people, for the general public, they're not required to check for a pulse now. So they changed the ABCs. It used to be airway, breathing, circulation. Now it's airway, breathing, compressions. Because from the breathing part, if you're checking for breathing for 5 to 10 seconds and they're not breathing, pretty good chance that they don't have a pulse. So they go right to compressions.
And then there's a problem of trying to remember, okay, how many breaths do I do? How many compressions do I do? So last time I was trained, the encouragement was, for at least for lay people, was, you know what? If you don't want to do the breathing part of it, or you don't remember how to do it, or you're not confident in your ability to do it, you are still doing a service to the patient to do the chest compressions alone, and there is value in that. Not that we want to tell people to throw out the breathing, but if there's some reason that that's a problem, we would encourage them to do just the chest compressions.
Definitely. That's, you know, we really stress where we talk about body substance isolation and protecting yourself from somebody that could be potentially infectious to you. And so sometimes in that situation, if they have blood on their face, or, you know, if they've thrown up or something like that, you don't necessarily want to, you know, get down and lip lock these people. You know, I mean, if we really stress that protective envelope, where, you know, use gloves, use eye protection, and then we really stress the barrier device, which is a plastic little face mask that you can place on somebody's face, and it has a one-way valve in, so that you're not getting anything from them, but you're able to give ventilations to them.
Yeah, let's talk about equipment. You mentioned the one-way valve mask and that kind of thing. And any other kind of equipment that folks probably ought to have in their homes or be able to carry with them.
That one I'm going to turf to Krista, because she actually is the queen of prevention when it comes to protecting herself. I'm really bad at that sometimes, but she's all over it.
Well, and he says that because a lot of my friends started to not wanting to hang out with me anymore, because it seems like wherever I go, I witness a terrible accident, or something terrible has just happened, and I roll up on it. And this has been since I left the fire department. I've witnessed a lot of terrible things. So what I carry is a fanny pack, and I'm not we call them Ricky Rescue, where you have a scanner and you're out looking for accidents. But, you know, I'm just prepared, and I have several pairs of gloves. I have eye protection, which are like the safety glasses if you're using for any type of, you know, in the workshop, and a CPR mask. And I actually carry two CPR masks in case somebody is doing CPR with me and they don't have one. So those are the main things I carry, and a blanket. I live in Forest Hill, so I know Larry will get some.
For those of our listeners in Forest Hill, that's where you live.
And as those Forest Hill listeners know, there's always a lot of accidents, or, you know, deers getting hit and people flying through the windshield. So I just like to be prepared.
Do they perform CPR on deer in Forest Hill?
Eric?
You know, that's, I'm sure somebody's tried to do that. It's kind of interesting, though, that I think Placer County Animal Control now is carrying a device for doing CPR on dogs.
And
so, you know, it's funny, in the fire service, we'll run somebody's house will burn, and it's amazing the trauma, emotional trauma that happens to people when they lose pets. And so at first, you know, on the surface, you kind of feel like, well, you know, come on, dog CPR. But actually, you start thinking about the emotional investment that some people have with their pets. It might not be a bad idea for somebody.
Well, What I think of is, I know what the outcomes are with people.
Exactly.
And even though we try to do the CPR, we encourage it because there are occasionally great saves, overwhelmingly, the results are not that pleasant. That's why we have people, we sit down to counsel them, do you really want, you know, given your state of health and you're likely to have a cardiac arrest and the trauma you would go through from CPR, do you want that done to you to live those few more days, probably in the ICU? And so to think of it with dogs, it kind of makes me ill.
Well, if you look at it, you know, we really stress there is a difference between pediatric CPR and adult CPR because of what the reason is that their heart stopped. And with kids, it's mostly a respiratory issue. And so when you get into animals, it's probably more likely that maybe they whiffed the food down a little bit too quick or something like that. And so, you know, POTS, I don't know what the rates are in survival for dogs, you know, but...
And as far as the mouth-to-mouth, I don't know how you're going to get a good seal on that Great Dane.
Mouth-to-snout.
Yeah, there it is.
Is there a particular time of year or season where you run into more types of these? I'm thinking the holidays are coming up. Mm-hmm. And people will go into turkey coma here. And you know, how do you revive someone from a turkey coma?
Good question. You are right, though. This time of year is when people... tend to go into cardiac arrest because there's higher fat foods and more alcohol. And also Super Bowl Sunday is another big day. And I think a lot of times because the big game's on, people don't want to call 911 because they're having chest pain until after the game. So I'm serious.
Now this is true. When I was in the emergency department, our slowest time, predictably, every year was during the Super Bowl. Ambulances wouldn't even come in every year.
Mm-hmm. It's true. So I think any holiday or any occasion where there's higher fat food, more alcohol, and less chance to actually know that you're having an emergency.
You know, I don't know how scientific it is, but I always noticed, and a lot of my partners did too, that when we got into that fall season, it almost followed that whole cycle of nature, you know, where, you know, the trees were losing their leaves, and it's like somebody gets to that point, it's like almost mentally, you know, there's seems like there's more cases of depression and sadness in people, and whether it's because of the shorter days and longer nights, it always seems to us that there was some kind of psychological aspect to it too, where they just kind of, some people just kind of give up.
We're suffering from dead air here.
It's that turkey sandwich turkey? I see over there.
Yeah, I was just stuffing this last bit of turkey down my throat here.
You know, Larry, if I could, there was something that, you know, when we were talking about CPR and effective CPR and early CPR, the best CPR that you could possibly do is only 30% of the effectiveness of a beating heart. So that's if you're doing the right amount of compressions, the right rate, the right depth, and everything, the effectiveness of that is only 30% of what your heart would normally, how it would normally move that blood. So when we start talking about dispatch times and early CPR and early AED, the faster that we can get that heart beating on its own again, the more likely, that's why they're more likely to survive. And because of introducing that electricity and depolarizing that heart and starting it over, that's what our goal is to keep that blood pumping, but not just pumping at that 30%. We need to pump it at that 100% what it was before the heart stopped.
In your experience, how often do you roll up on a scene where the family member or other citizen has successfully been maintaining the CPR? Or often are you the very first form of intervention?
You know, we get sometimes get dispatched to a call where they'll say CPR instructions are being given, and so typically we're going to be kind of on high alert that person has suffered some kind of situation where their heart's not beating. Usually when we get there, though, if somebody actually is doing CPR on that person, they want to be done with it. They don't want anything to do with it. They want us in there as fast as we can, you know, to take over. So it's actually pretty rare that people really get in there and do that, you know, do that significant life-saving step. And it's really unfortunate, because if they could just buy them a couple minutes until, you know, some other therapies got in there, it would make a big difference.
I find a lot of times, too, we'll be dispatched to a call, and they'll say that CPR instructions have been refused. So dispatch is trying to tell somebody how to do CPR, but they're refusing, whether it be because they don't want to, you know, maybe they're not comfortable with it, they're too, you know, they're too traumatized by experiencing this emergency, or, you know, maybe they just are uncomfortable doing the airway. But we have that, too.
Well, or is it because CPR fairly exhausting to do? I mean, physically exhausting to the caregiver.
It's very physically exhausting. I mean, in the first 2 minutes, you will feel wiped out. You'll feel like you're doing CPR for half an hour.
Okay, that brings us to the end of our first hour of this week's Medically Speaking Radio. We will be having another half hour after the news at the top of the hour. So we do invite you to come back, because we will have our same guests. We'll be speaking about anything we want to continue on, if there's phone calls about CPR, but we will be getting into fitness, right, Krista?
Correct.
Okay. And because CPR is exhaustive. It'll be the Fit Force Boot Camp we'll be talking about. So stay tuned. We will be back. For those of you that have to leave because of the hour or whatever reason, we do hope that you'll come back and join us next week as we speak with Dr. Hampman about the hospitalist program right here at Sutter-Aberfeith Hospital.